This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Feeding Time. I'm Feku. On the show today, Darren Teo from Dewakan will be sharing his thoughts on the principles of sous vide cooking and how to make your own sous vide machine at home.
I grab the chicken breast in my hand to make sure that it's really, really tight, and then I suck like no tomorrow, and just till you're blue in the face, and just when you know everything is just kind of tight and you can feel it.
You can feel it, yeah.
You slide it off and you and pull it off and ziplock it.
Later on, he shares his recipe for crème anglaise sous vide style.
You know, so it's like sometimes when you go and have like an eggnog, and it really is just eggnog.
I know, yeah.
And it's like, wow, you know, you're like eating it right off the bum of a chicken, you know, and that just doesn't work.
But first up, here's what I've been eating around town this week. Best surprises are the ones that come up and creep up and capture you unexpectedly and entrance you entirely. And this has been the case with a little farm on the hill, which I've had the privilege to visit just yesterday on an overcast and a little bit rainy day. A little farm on the hill is located in Jundabyke, and it's run by husband and wife couple, Pete Teo, the musician, the very same, and his architect wife, Lisa. And it's a sheer 40 minutes drive by car, and it's located on the hilltop. It's 6 acres of absolute bliss. Pete and his wife decided to become urban farmers, or urban in the manner of speaking, and they embarked on this journey with great gusto, even though they were both novices, had absolutely no idea about horticulture, but they quickly discovered, you know, through trial and error, how to grow crops using crop rotation, steaming the soil to make sure they could kill the bacteria, and the result has been absolutely phenomenal. They have managed to grow everything from heirloom tomatoes, which are virtually impossible to grow in Malaysia, but they managed it and successfully. They have a fish pond where they have cultivate sun hock and other fish. They've got even bees to make honey and jam, a massive variety of vegetables and herbs, which they use to supply food for the kitchen where they do catering in the dining room. So proving that he's so much more than just a one-trick pony, Pete Teo, he's even built his own six-tiered oven where they do low and slow charcoal smoking of their meat. And the farm that him and his wife have established is truly a gem, simply known as a little farm on the hill. The food is touted as being rustic yet sophisticated, and it's cooked by Lisa, who has obvious talents in the kitchen. The food is whimsical but unerringly hits the spot. So you can have things like couscous salad with homegrown organic vegetables, the meat such as a brisket or beef brisket, not traditionally a cut that's associated with tender succulents, or even the rump, is then smoked slowly for about 6-8 hours in the oven that he built with a little help from Google. And you then enjoy your meal in a dining room that is entrancing. It's got beautiful floor-to-ceiling glass-fronted doors that afford you panoramic vistas of the farm and the forest. And it's perfect for those days when you just want to get out of the city, spend a few hours away, and enjoy some utterly delicious food that's untrammeled by pesticides, or it's organic farming at its absolute best. So if you want to go there, do remember that you have to book in advance, because booking is absolutely essential. On their website, The Little Farm on the Hill, they provide you a calendar that shows the availability of the sessions. You can go online to alittlefarmonthehill.com. A Little Farm on the Hill is located at Lot 161 in Tanarimba, Jundabyke, Pesiaran Enderong in Bukit Tinggi in Bentong. The phone number there is 09-233-0194, and you can either go for lunch in the dining room where they accommodate up to 20 people, or you can even book the spot out for a party. Trust me, you will not regret it. This is absolutely heartwarming place where you will get an overwhelming sense of tranquility, and you'll really, really enjoy your time there. In the studio with me today, our good friend and chef Darren Teo, here to talk today about the sous vide technique. This is going to be a masterclass. We'll be examining, you know, the sous vide, what it's all about, what makes it tick, what makes it so special and so desirable. Obviously, this has become a hot technique in the last couple of years in Malaysia. We've always been playing catch up with the rest of the world, and sous vide has been around for, you know, most of the last decade anyway. But in Malaysia, it's starting to show its face in different menus around town. Talk us through the whole sous vide technique and what actually does it mean for people who might not actually know what it is.
Well, actually, hi, Faye. The sous vide technique, interestingly enough, has been around in KL for at least 5 or 6 years. One of the major proponents of the technique has been the school that I used to work, that I work for, KDU University College. And we've had a subject that just covers sous vide technique and that's given to diploma students. Essentially, what it is raw food that's being put into a bag. It's hermetically sealed under pressure so that the bag covers the raw item.
No oxygen in there at all.
Correct. So there's no air pockets. And then it's either steamed or put into a water bath. And it must have a precision temperature control. Yeah, so Essentially that's it.
So the cornerstone of a sous vide is got to have absolutely no air in it.
Yeah.
It's got to have a controlled temperature for it to work.
Yeah.
And what is the result when the sous vide works? It's a succulent piece of meat that's very tender and very moist, right?
Yeah, well, when we're talking about meats, then yeah. So essentially the three pillars are time, pressure, and temperature. So you can't forget time as well.
Okay.
So when you cook meat, for example, there's no loss in flavonoids. So when we cook on the stove or in an oven, a lot of the water that evaporates carries flavonoids along with it. And when it's cooked in a bag, it retains inside there. So it's also a lot less loss of water or moisture, because it's all contained in the bag. And for vegetables and for fruit, you know, you prevent a lot of oxidization, and that results in a cleaner looking produce or product that although it's been cooked, it doesn't look like it.
But does that mean also that the nutrients are also better retained? Well, or does it get destroyed by the heat?
Well, yeah, I think it depends on what kind of nutrients. So not all nutrients stay on after the heat. But because the basis of sous vide cooking is low temperature cooking, not all of it gets destroyed. But nutrients are a little bit hard to
quantify.
Say whether yes or no, you know, because I don't have that kind of scientific...
But in terms of satisfaction and flavor profile, it really heightens it, right?
Yeah. Well, what it does is it concentrates it. And the word that we use a lot for is optimal. Optimal temperature, optimal time, optimal pressure will give you an optimal texture and taste. So that's what we're going for.
Okay, but the thing about sous vide, obviously, that deters most house cooks from attempting it is that the cost is very prohibitive.
Mm-hmm.
To buy the machine is what? A few thousand ringgit.
Definitely.
Then you have to buy the machine for the lamination for the bag
Vacuum pack machine.
Right? And then you got to buy the bags.
Yeah, and you have to get the bags.
So, I mean, your investment, if you want to go into the sous vide technique, you're looking at what? $5,000?
No. A lot more? Yeah. Okay, the argument for this kind of cooking, and a lot of kitchens are experiencing it as well now, is that bags. You buy a circulator, a vacuum pack machine, and that's your fixed asset. You basically get to use it over and over again with maintenance. But the bags, however, are a buy and throw away kind of deal. So you buy them, you use them, and you actually have to throw them away.
Yeah, you can't recycle those bags.
You cannot recycle those bags. So that puts it in a situation where, number one, it's cost, and number two, the usage of those bags contribute to the planet's sustainability.
Yes.
Because those bags are plastic and so on and so forth. In a regular kitchen, you've got a vacuum pack machine. Now, that's a machine that packs the food items in special bags, and they look kind of like if you would went to a supermarket and you'd see like all these packed beetroots
meats
and all that. All of them come, those are the vacuum, that's a vacuum pack machine. They come in different sizes and they come from different makes as well. You have those that come from Taiwan, from China, and then you have those that come from Europe, and the price ranges from the kind of usage that you need. You then have a water circulator, and the water circulator is basically a tank with a stirrer. Now, this stirrer agitates the water.
Yeah, I was just gonna say it's an agitator, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an agitator. So it just agitates the water and circulates the water through a pump, and it moves the water around. And at the same time, it heats the water with the desired temperature that you want to set. Now, this happens so that you keep water circulating and so that the temperature control is more or less even along the cabin. Then you have the bags themselves. So if you put all of that stuff together, that's your whole
and
setup.
And that's not even looking at the machine yet, right?
Yeah.
The actual machine itself is also quite...
What, the circulator itself?
The circulator, yeah.
Yeah, the circulator itself. So like the one that I use at... The one that I use at Dewakan and also at the KD University is... It's almost $8,000 just for the circulator itself.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, but well, we got a top range one. So there are cheaper options and there are also domestic options.
Because the thing is, it's also quite space consuming. Apart from the environmental costs, apart from the fiscal costs,
yeah.
You then also have to talk about the space. If you're living in a small apartment, once you dump the circulator in, once you dump the machine for your vacuum packing in, then you got to look for a space to put all your... it becomes... The ROI for having a nice piece of produce at the end of it becomes a little
Absolutely.
Bit costly.
Absolutely. It might be cheaper for you to learn how to cook properly instead of just relying on a bag. Yeah, but yeah... But having said that, there are people who are enthusiastic about just the idea of learning a new technique. You know, it's like once if you're a home cook and you've already covered the baking, the roasting, and you do pretty all right, and then you hear about sous vide cooking and you think, oh, you know, great temperature control and all that. It's just something that someone would just get interested by. And it's not just cooks, but you also have DIY guys, you know, who just say, oh, you know, this is a rig that I can set up, you know, and... Yeah. They just get interested in just the gadgetry of it.
But you personally, do you think it's worth...
Purchasing a unit?
Well, do you think it's worth a home cook's efforts to try and to master it? Do you think it's a fad? Do you think it's a gimmicky? Or do you think it's something that's here to stay?
Well, I think in it's almost irreplaceable in some kitchens.
Okay.
Almost. You can still properly cook. That's not a problem. For a home cook, however, I think it's... If you're talking about just for fun, then yeah, why not?
Yeah.
You know, but if you're talking about, oh, you know, I've got to prepare the meat like this every day, you know, that's not going to work out.
Yeah, it's
you
not might, even viable time-wise anyway.
Yeah, and essentially, like, the thing that we teach at the university quite a bit is that you need to have basic cooking principles down pat.
And before you can attempt this,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, you know, so once you understand how the meat works, then you realize that, okay, you know what, maybe sous vide cooking would work for this, but maybe it won't work for that. For example, if you're going to do like barbecue ribs and you have to cook it first, ribs are a great way to cook sous vide. It's just that it takes a longer time and a lower temperature and you get like perfect meat. You know, as opposed to taking how they do ribs in most places is to take it and they steam it or they braise it first before they char grill it. So if you were to sous vide cook it, number one, you don't lose a lot of flavor.
Yeah,
and you don't lose a lot of moisture and you still retain a very springy kind of meat. And that makes it interesting when you grill it because then it'd be almost like eating a steak.
Yes, the presentation also is really enhanced.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say someone at home, they say, okay, look, I've got the fundamentals of cooking down pat. I understand how cooking meat works. I understand the principles of temperature and time and all the rest of it. I'd like to try it, but I can't afford to buy the bloody machine.
Right.
So, you being a MacGyver of sorts, you've right, actually rigged one up at home before, haven't you?
Yeah, we have, yeah.
Okay, let's get into the fun bit. Talk us through how to make your own sous vide machine.
Okay, so I won't go as far as making the sous vide machine because there are DIYs that teach you how to make it yourself, and you can do that. What we did, well...
Did you do this as part of Cuisine Riot, which was your experimental cooking lab thing?
Oh, no, this was way before. This was when I was cooking in Singapore, and at that time, sous vide cooking was just kind of coming out, and we thought, like, hey, you know, this is something we got to try. Same with, like, how we started with the spherication and things like that. We just had to MacGyver most of it.
Yes.
And now it's a lot easier for the consumer because you can get units. I don't know the price, but things like Sous Vide Supreme, for example, is a domestic unit. You can also get the Polyscience unit, which is a lot smaller and a lot cheaper than the ones that I'm using. Okay, so this is what I did when you told me about this. I talked to a couple of my friends from before as well, and I got them to just tell me, hey, do you remember that time when we were all crazy about it? And they all came back with like a few versions of whatever it is that we do. Essentially, what you need is a water container with some sort of a heating element. And for this, we have... I've heard and I've used...
Those metal dishes?
No. So basically, what you need is a water container, lah,
okay,
right? With a heating element.
So it can be plastic? It can be silicone?
It can be just about anything. Let me tell you what I've talked to some of my chef friends and myself. This is what the range of what everybody has used. If you use soup kettles, rice cookers, crock pots, pots, and just basically anything that has, you can put water in and you can heat it up.
Yes.
Right. So anything. And I had a friend also who had this element that you put into those huge water kettles.
Yes,
and he put
the
that
heating
one
element.
In. Yeah, the heating element. And he put that into a aluminium basin. And he's done that before.
So you could, theoretically, you could disassemble a kettle.
You could.
And take out the base and then pop that in, right?
Yeah, but just don't electrocute yourself.
I was going to say, electrocution could be a risk because there's water involved.
Yeah, so if you're listening at home, please don't do that. All right, I will not
be responsible. So what's a good heating element to use? Does electrocution?
Okay, so the one that I found, that I find the easiest to use, is actually a crock pot. And if not a crock pot, some sort of a ceramic pot.
Because the crock pot already has a heater
correct,
in it, so you don't even have to do much.
Yeah, well, the only thing about the crock pot is that you can't control temperature. And like I told you just now, like the temperatures are very important.
A key consideration.
Yeah. So it's either that or a pot on a stove. That also works.
Okay.
And then as far as putting the food into bags, there are options where you can buy these handheld vacuum machines. There's a vacuum machine that kind of like, it doesn't vacuum it, but it pulls air out of a bag. These are probably not worth buying because they don't seal as well. Then there are Ziploc bags. And Ziploc bags are probably God's gift to all cooks. We use Ziploc bags to replace...
because you can reuse it as well.
Well, number one, you can reuse it. And number two, they have a very good quality plastic. They don't turn brittle when you warm them up. So you'd have to look for the ones that are heat friendly. The downside of that is that you can't use a very high temperature. It only goes to like about 60 odd degrees Celsius, and that works well.
So, okay. So you get a Ziploc bag. How do you... So with the air, what is it? A straw? Simple straw?
Yeah, it is. Well, if you don't want to get like, you know, saliva in the bag, you use a straw. Or actually, I found if you get like a small piece of aquarium tubing.
So
that works a lot better than the straw
because it's got more flexibility.
It's more flexible and it's more pliable.
You can
pliable.
target the air removal.
Yeah.
So you put your meat in there.
Yeah.
Okay, you put your meat in there, you Ziploc it almost to the end, to the center.
Yeah.
You stick the tubing in right at the center.
Well, no. Okay, so this is what I do. So I have the meat that I want. All right, and let's just say it's a chicken breast. I set the heating on my crock pot. And then I set the temperature at about 56 degrees Celsius. I put the chicken in and then I press as much air out as possible and try and push it with a spatula or a scraper, and then I seal it. But before I seal it towards the end, that's where I slot in the tubing.
Right.
And then I push to as tight as possible. I grab the chicken breast in my hand to make sure that it's really, really tight. And then I suck like no tomorrow, and just till you're blue in the face, and just when you know everything is just kind of tight and you can feel it.
You can feel it, yeah.
You slide it off and pull it off and ziplock it.
Is that fail-safe? I mean, is that foolproof?
It doesn't give you the commercial.
Of course.
Yeah.
You can't get that replicated vacuum packedness,
yeah,
but
you can't,
you're still
do that.
Fairly satisfied.
But it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works. In times when we do outside caterings, and sometimes you just got like, you know, a last minute, I have to do this. This MacGyvering works.
Okay, next up, Darren will be continuing to talk about the rest of the MacGyver technique for the sous vide, as well as great recipes that we can make with it. This is Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9. This is Feeding Time. I'm Faye Koo. In the studio, Dewa Khan, head chef, Darren Teo, talking about the intricacies of sous vide, and he's actually in the process of talking about how you can make your own sous vide at home, you know, without paying the extortionate price tag. So we've talked about the vacuum pack technique. We can use a good Ziploc bag. We can use aquarium tubing, and you've got to be very assiduous in making sure all the excessive air is taken out first before you remove the very last bits.
Yeah.
But obviously, as you said, the agitator, that's going to be a key component in making sure that the steam bath cooks it properly.
So, well, we talk about the heat, and the heat is coming from the heating element that you find in the crock pot or from the stove. The other thing is that you need to have a thermometer to monitor the temperature. So there's a lot of going up and going down in temperatures.
So a meat thermometer.
Yeah, it's a regular meat thermometer. Mm. Find something that you get in like, preferably something that's electronic, because a bit digital thermometer.
A digital thermometer is more accurate, right?
A bit more accurate.
So okay, then let's talk temperatures. You've got the thermometer. How do you know what temperature works for which kind of meat? What's the rule of thumb?
They're guides, and you can find a lot of these guides online because there are quite a lot of sous vide enthusiasts. Typically, for poultry, for duck, I do about 52 to 56, depending on what I do with it after. So there's some things that you need to consider in terms of the guide, is that when they talk about when they talk about the temperature, they refer to the core temperature of the item itself. And the core temperature must reach equilibrium. And equilibrium means that the water, which is the medium that is being cooked in, and the core temperature has to be the same or thereabouts. Different connective tissues within different muscles of different animals have got different cooking temperatures. So for poultry, I usually use around 52 to 56
Celsius.
Degrees Celsius on the core temperature. And when I'm done with that, I usually rest it. And I'll probably walk you through the process in a bit. Then you also have to consider the cooking after.
Yes.
So if you're doing like duck or something, you want to pan fry it after to get that nice browning reaction. So you'd also have to consider that when you're cooking. So I usually undercook just a little bit to get like a medium rare. So how it works is that we get the water going and we get the meat in the bag going. We take out as much air. And for example, if it was chicken, for chicken breast, I would do about 52 degrees Celsius internal temperature. And I would put that into the water bath. So the water bath I put in at about plus 2 degrees Celsius. So that means at 54 degrees Celsius. And we will allow this to cook for about 15 to 20 minutes. What happens is that the connective tissue will start to cook at the optimal temperature, and that's 52 degrees Celsius. When you pan fry a chicken just off the fridge and onto the pan, you'd find there's a massive amount of shrinkage.
Yeah, it seizes.
Seizes because the muscles are contracting because of this huge change in temperature. Whereas when sous vide cooking, it's a gradual change of temperature. And when that gradual change of temperature happens, the connective tissue does not seize and does not become alienated in that sense. So it goes through a very gentle cooking. We use the bag because this allows the water to surround the chicken breast evenly, and therefore you get an even cooking. Now at 52 degrees Celsius, if you cooked it more than 15 to 20 minutes, you would still be at the same because you're at equilibrium. The texture does not change tremendously even after an hour, but you want to take it out before that.
Yeah, because what happens is when you take it out, it continues to cook. So then that will eventually result in overcooking anyway,
well,
right?
Not really. The thing with sous vide cooking is that it will not overcook because it's at equilibrium. The water is at 52. It will never go more.
No, what I mean is after
you've
removed it.
You're talking about carryover cooking, right?
Yeah, carryover cooking.
Even after you take it out, because the temperature, there's no way for it to go higher than 52 degrees Celsius. It stays at 52 or it goes down because it's cold. So now once you take out that meat after about 15, 20 minutes, you want to cool it down if you want to keep it for cooking later. Or you could just take it off the bag, remove the extra jus that's inside and pat down the chicken, and then on a very high skillet, very high heat skillet, just sear the skin or sear it without the skin, up to you, till you get a nice brown. Usually I throw in some butter just for like a burn ozette, and then you just remove that.
Yes.
And there you go.
Do you ever sous vide with a marinade?
Yeah. So you can sous vide with marinade, you can sous vide with just seasoning, or you can sous vide with just herbs. And that works very well as well. If you're talking about chicken, quite usually we probably use like an orange peel and some thyme and some crushed garlic.
Yum.
Yeah. So just put that into the bag. Make sure it does not sit on the chicken. Make sure it sits by the side of the chicken or whatever meat, so that when you seal it, it doesn't press and cause an indentation on the meat. That's one. And number two, there won't be direct contact, and that direct contact will only affect that small area in which it touches. So you put it on the side so that when the meat starts to release its flavor or its jus or the water that comes out, which will happen anyway, it will come in contact with the other flavor profiles of the orange and of the thyme, and they kind of like circulate back
right
into it. Yeah,
technology exchange between the two.
Yeah, absolutely.
Osmosis.
Yeah. Yeah. An osmosis of technology, yeah.
So what are some dishes that you've made using sous vide that you found had to be particularly serendipitous at the Wakan?
Okay, so there's just two that I thought about that I really, really enjoy. The first one's pretty normal, and that's our lamb breast, actually. Lamb breast is really one of those cuts that just get thrown into the soup kambing and stuff like that, or some dodgy mutton curry in some Indian shop. But what we do is we cook it really slow, 24 hours. We take the breast, we marinate that with crushed garlic, rock salt and pepper. And then after about a day's marination, we take that marinade out, take it out of the marinade, and that goes into a bag. And then we cook that for about a day with 81 degrees Celsius.
A day?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, a professional piece, you can do a day, right? And we do in volume anyway.
Yes,
so
in volume, I was going to say.
Yeah, quite a bit of volume. So it takes about a day, and then we remove that, and then we throw it into ice to just cool it down as fast as possible. That's one of the things that we use at Dewakan. The other is something that we did over Christmas, and that we served our version of an eggnog to our guests. It's just as a little complimentary bit for Christmas. And you can make things like crème pâtisserie, and you can make things like anglaise and custards using the bag as well. So I've got a bit of a recipe. It's 250 mLs of eggs.
So how many eggs is that?
That's about nine eggs.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's white and yolk.
A white and yolk. Yeah, if you can just throw it into a measuring cup, that'd be easy.
Okay, yeah.
100 mLs of cream, 100 mLs of milk, about 50 grams of
cream. Should you use a double cream?
Yeah, double cream.
Yep, okay.
Yeah. About 50 grams of sugar, depending on what you like. And then about 1 cm of ginger, 2 pieces of clove, about 1 piece of star anise. And then we combine all these ingredients together and we put that into a bag.
So you mix everything together. So you've got this very watery mixture.
Yeah, yeah.
And you dump it into the bag.
Yeah.
And then you vacuum pack it.
And then we put it inside the, you could put it inside a Ziploc. Push out all of that air, stand it into the water bath that you've prepared, 82 degrees Celsius for about 90 minutes.
Okay.
So just make sure that it's constant 82 degrees Celsius. Then you remove that bag, and what will happen is that a custard will have formed on the inside.
Okay.
And then you can ice that down.
Straight away you ice it?
Straight away ice it so that you don't want that egg to coagulate any further. Then you strain it out. Well, we use an espuma, or a cream charger sort of siphon, but you can also use a KitchenAid or any sort of whip. Right before serving, give it a good go with the whip.
So after you strain it out, you refrigerate it
until you're
ready to serve.
Yes.
And then right before you serve it, you just put the hand mixer.
Yeah.
Just give it a whiz.
Yeah, just blitz it until it gets light and fluffy. And also, this is where you probably want to like dump in your cognac or your rum as you would like it. And then you serve.
My God, that sounds terribly easy, actually.
Yes, it is. And
but very, very impressive as a dessert.
Yeah, definitely. So you put in your rum, and then you just dust it with a little bit of cocoa powder and a little bit of cinnamon powder. And you've got this very fragrant custard that's not overbearing with that egginess.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like sometimes when you go and have like an eggnog, and it really is just eggnog.
I know.
And it's like, wow, you know, you're like eating it right off the bum of a chicken, you know, and and that just doesn't work. So this method, using the slow, low temperature cooking and for a longer period of time, you denature.
You mitigate that eggy,
yes.
Overpowering egginess of the dish.
Absolutely. I have to say though that you have to use fresh eggs for this because it's going to taste horrible if you don't.
So as fresh an egg as possible
as you can get,
short of pulling it out of the chicken's bum.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So do you currently have any sous vide dishes on your tasting menu at Dewakan?
Well, yeah, the lamb is one of them.
Okay, it's still on the menu?
It's still on the menu. Now, the thing is that sous vide is not it's not the star of the show.
No.
The ingredient is the star of the show.
Exactly.
And proper manipulation of the ingredient, I use the word manipulation quite loosely, but proper usage of the technique onto the ingredient will give you perfect cooking. I'll give you an example. Our duck dish now, most people think it's sous vide cooked, but it's not. We just cook it a very traditional way. The differences that we do to it is like by dry aging it a little bit so that we get that fat out, and just paying a lot of attention to how it's cooked and how it's prepared before we serve the guests. Many people think that, oh, do you use sous vide cooking? No, we don't. So the lamb does a lot of sous vide cooking. We use a lot of low temperature cooking. We use the bag a lot for macerating and for pickling and for brining. Those are the things that we use the bags for. But, you know, because it's a tasting menu, different ingredients get affected differently. And we kind of like use the vacuum bag cooking just as another technique, like the same way that you use sauteing and roasting and things like that.
Cooking with thoughtfulness and care.
Yeah,
that's
you'd
exactly
have to,
it. Yeah. Well, if you haven't been to Dewakan yet, please do so as soon as you possibly can because it's really worth your while and the journey. Dewakan is located at the KDU
University
College. Campus.
Yeah.
In Shah Alam.
Yeah, Glenmary.
Glenmary. Bookings are absolutely essential because they're always fully booked. You're now open for lunch and dinner.
Yeah, so we're open for lunch Monday to Friday and we're open for dinner Thursdays to Saturdays. Thursdays to Saturdays are almost impossible to get bookings on the same week, to be honest. So like a two-week leeway, that's good.
Fantastic. Yeah. And you've got an eight-course.
Yeah, so for lunch, we do a 3 and a 4 course. That's a quick lunch. For dinner, we've got a 5 and a 10 course. The 10 course is really what we want to talk about. And the 10 course is that journey that we want to, that symphony that we put together for you to enjoy. So it gives you a better picture about what Dewakan's about as a restaurant.
Take the luxurious meandering route because that's the journey of discovery. Okay, what's the phone number to call if they want to make a booking?
So it's 03-5565-0767.
Okay, thanks a million, Darren. As always, illuminating and enlightening. Thank you.
All right, super.
Thank you to Darren Teo for his very illuminating take on sous vide cooking. If you want to find out what Dewakan is giving away this week, don't forget to follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/BFM Feeding Time, or follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Miss Koo, that's MISSKHOO, for more information about the show. We hope you've enjoyed the sous vide masterclass. Till next Saturday, this has been Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.